Hey everyone, welcome to another podcast at From Bottom Up. Today I'm interviewing Ram Dev from Ram Dev, a blog on living simply, balancing life, and exploring existence. Ram is currently located in Kathmandu, Nepal, but what's interesting is he doesn't live in Nepal at all. One day he decided to pack his bag and go on a 6-month journey to Asia, and so far he's stayed in countries like India and Vietnam, and for the last 2 months of this journey, he's staying in Nepal. So I'm just really excited to be able to talk to a digital nomad today. So thanks and welcome, Ram.
Thanks, Albert. It's great to be here.
Awesome. So for people who don't really know you and want to get a little bit about your background or just where you came from, I was wondering if you could give us a little background story of yourself.
Sure. I'll start from the very beginning, or even before I existed.
Okay.
My family is a American family, but we grew up in a Hindu style lifestyle. My parents follow the Hindu religion. They were not born that way, but they decided to start following it before I was born. And I was basically raised traditional Hindu style, in that I ate on the floor, slept on the floor. I was strict vegetarian. We actually had no TV in the house. I was homeschooled my whole life. Never went to college. Basically self-taught myself everything. And my family's always owned their own business, so I was exposed to a very entrepreneurial type family setting. From an early age, I got into computers and really fell in love with that, and spent most of my teens on the computers. In my early 20s, I got into real estate investments, and I ended up buying 3 properties total, did all the maintenance and management myself.
Wow.
Simultaneously, I was working a full-time job at a startup and also doing freelance IT consulting on the side. So I was working about anywhere between 70 and 80 hours a week.
Wow. 70 and 80 hours a week?
Yeah. So it was quite the, it was an entire lifestyle. If you asked me, what kind of life I had, I would say I didn't have a life. It was just work.
That's crazy.
And that went, and it went like that for, probably on and off for 6 or 7 years. And I had bought the properties with the intention of keeping them long term. And when the mortgage crisis of 2007 happened, I ended up losing all 3 of the properties to foreclosure, filed for bankruptcy, and was suddenly left with new options available to me, and decided in late 2009 that I was going to do something that I've always wanted to do, which was travel the world and live as a nomad, just exploring wherever I felt like exploring, and quit my job, sold the rest of my possessions, and packed a backpack, 1 backpack worth of stuff, and I left in March of this year. And I've been traveling. I spent 3 months in India, 2 months in Vietnam, and then I just, not 2 months, 2 weeks in Vietnam, and then I just got to Nepal a few days ago, and I'll be here for 2 months before I go back to India for 2 weeks, and then back to the United States in September.
So you basically went from like a real estate businessman to a traveler, a nomad.
Yeah, I went from an IT consultant to a person working in an IT startup company to real estate. I even worked as doing construction jobs. My uncle owns a drywall business. I did that for a while. So I've done a lot of different things, and I basically just go with whatever my gut tells me to go with, and that's how I live my life. I, just follow my heart, follow my compass, follow what I feel like I should be doing, and it seems to work pretty well for me so far.
Cool. And, I just really appreciate just your journey. I mean, I think it's really interesting because you've had such an unconventional beginnings, And just as a, you know, child growing up and just living a Hindu lifestyle, you know, growing up. So, yeah, I really appreciate you saying, you sharing that with us.
Yeah, no problem.
So my next question is, how did you transition from kind of doing what you were doing before to doing what you're doing now, which is blogging and writing all of this stuff?
Well, I've always been into writing in one form or another. My dad is a writer. Growing up, he was a freelance technical writer, and he actually used to give me a lot of his stuff to copy edit and check for errors and things like that from, I don't know, prior from when I was like 9, 10 years old. So I learned how to do copy editing and just writing in general from a very early age, and I enjoyed it myself. I mean, on a lot of the business road trips that we went on, I spent a lot of time in the back seat with a notebook just writing short stories and creative writing and things like that. So
nice.
When I started getting into computers and got on the internet, I immediately saw the potential for publishing online, and I started doing that right away. Because I was learning computer programming, I actually wrote a lot of my own several versions of my own blogging software initially. This was before WordPress even existed.
Yeah.
And probably spent a lot more time maintaining my blogging software than actually blogging, so I didn't get a whole lot of blogging done.
Yeah.
But once I found WordPress, I installed that, and 2006 I started blogging more regularly, writing mostly IT how-to type articles, and a little bit of personal development. And in the past year and a half, I've started doing more personal development and more lifestyle design type posts.
And I can,
since I started traveling, I've started writing more about my travels and more about lifestyle design and just my observations and things like that.
Yeah, and I can definitely see that you've gone a long way with your blog. I mean, you know, I've been a recent reader, and I thought this was kind of like a recent blog, but I checked your archives, and it goes back all the way back to like 2002, 2003. So it,
yeah.
You know, you have gone through a lot, and you started with IT, and just I kind of can relate to this because I, you know, I've kind of made switches to what I'm writing about, and you know, obviously I'm interviewing people right now, but it's cool because with a blog, you never know what direction you're going to take, and it does take a lot of searching. So I'm glad that I'm able to, you know, read about your traveling experiences as of right now.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I see blogging as a huge, and I've heard other people mention this, that it's a huge personal development tool. And especially if you keep your archives, I mean, I know a lot of people who spend years blogging and then just wipe away their archives because they either embarrassed by them or they don't want other people to see them or whatever. And while I'm embarrassed about some of the stuff that I wrote, you know, back in 2002, it was a lot more, you know, here's what I did today and here's what I'm feeling or whatever. And I just see that as, hey, it's a part of history. It's a way for me to gauge, you know, where I've been and where I'm going. And I can look back and see, you know, how far I've come, and I definitely see blogging as a way of keeping track of the things that I've done and the way my opinions have changed and things like that over the years. So I see myself blogging for pretty much the rest of my life because it's such a useful tool for sharing information as well as, you know, seeing where you've been and where you're going.
Okay, great. All right, so Ram, my next thing I want to talk about is something I think everybody can relate to, which is basically from the time they wake up in the morning to the time they fall asleep at night, and that's our daily schedules. But I know you're traveling a lot right now, so you probably don't have a set schedule. But I was wondering if you just kind of give us a glimpse into, you know, what your daily schedule is currently like right now.
I really don't have much of a schedule at all. My schedule pretty much involves me going to sleep, waking up, maybe checking email and doing some writing. And for the rest of the day, it's whatever I decide to do. because I'm constantly, usually I'm in new places and unfamiliar places.
My to-do list generally consists of going and exploring somewhere new that I, you know, that I haven't been, or just going to a cafe that I found that I really liked and just spending the day there working on my laptop.
Yeah.
It's really a make up my schedule every day as I go. And that's really what I intended to do when I started traveling, is I didn't want to have to feel obligated that Monday through Friday I have to be in this spot and I have to do this, and this. And, you know, I wanted to be able to say, I don't want to know when it's a Monday, and I don't want to know when it's a Friday or a Saturday. And that's absolutely what the case is. I mean, I have no idea most of the time what day it is. Literally, I have to look at the date on my computer to say, oh, today's Friday. Oh, okay. And then I think back to, you know, what my Fridays used to be like and how I used to say, wow, I'm so glad it's Friday because the weekend's here. And now every day may as well be the weekend. So it's definitely a very freeing experience, not having a fixed schedule.
Yeah, and I think that's really cool that you mentioned this. I think that's one of the benefits of being a nomad compared to working maybe like a, you know, conventional job, because you,
a 9-to-5, yeah.
Yeah, because you have the freedom and the flexibility to basically wake up and just, you know, do whatever you want at whenever you want. So, you know.
Yeah, and I think it definitely contributes to creativity. Like if I'm feeling really creative at any point during the day, I can just stop what I'm doing and start, you know, being creative, start writing.
Right.
Or
yeah.
If I suddenly have an idea that I, you know, want to research something, I can just go research. I don't have to worry about, oh, I have to, you know, I have to get this project finished by this time or whatever. I mean, I do have projects that I work on now, but it's not as structured as it used to be. And that definitely enables me to be more creative and spend more time doing things that I feel are important.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, great, Rom. That was cool that you shared that. All right, so let's talk about your traveling experiences. But what's interesting to me is just, you know, I read some posts before you got into traveling, and they dealt with kind of your preparation. So I was wondering if you could share, you know, with your readers, take us back to, you know, before you embarked on this journey. Like, what was going on through your mind, and what did you have to do in order to prepare for this?
All right. Well, basically this was my first trip abroad. I never traveled outside the United States by myself at all prior to this. So it was an entirely new experience. I literally did not have a passport for, I don't know, like 20 years. And I had to apply for a passport about 6 months before I decided to do this. And I mean, that's literally how new all this stuff was to me.
Yeah.
And in terms of figuring out where I was going to go, I didn't know where I was going to go. All I knew was I was going to go somewhere, and it was going to be outside the U.S.
Okay.
And I basically just started telling people that I knew that, hey, I'm quitting my job and I'm going to start traveling the world. And they would ask me, where are you going? And I would say, I have no idea. Where do you think I should go? And they would recommend places that, you know, they knew people or whatever, and they would give me their names and connect me with them and say, hey, go visit, you know, so-and-so in this country or whatever. So I started building up a list of all the different places around the world where I could meet somebody. And one
of
those people just happened to... some of the places, let me see, I actually have a list right here, places to visit. I have United States, I have at least a dozen different states with people, and these are all places that prior to my deciding to do this, I had no idea, I had no knowledge of any of these people, and now I have people in basically Nepal, Taiwan, India, Australia, Canada, United States, Ireland, South Africa, Portugal, Japan, Philippines, Thailand, China, Egypt, Vietnam. So, I mean, these are all places that, you know, I can go right now and there'll be someone somewhere that can meet me there.
So you finally connected with someone in India, or, I mean, someone that knows?
In India.
Okay.
Yes, it was a good friend of the family, and he heard about my story, that what I was doing, and he has family in Bangalore, India. He actually has family and he runs a business there.
All right.
So he invited me to come start my journey there, and I stayed with him he actually picked me up from the airport when I got there, and I stayed with him for a week, and then he connected me with somebody in a town 7 hours or 8 hours bus ride west of Bangalore in a tiny town called Ujjaday.
Okay.
I stayed in a little remote farmhouse there for a while, and basically that's how the whole journey started. It was one connection to another.
How much was the budget to go to?
The budget for 6 months was, and I literally, this was a non-negotiable budget because this is about how much I had in my bank at the time, $3,000 for 6 months.
Nice.
And that did not, I mean, that doesn't include the round trip plane ticket. So I had, I had about $4,500 or so. And after buying the plane ticket, it was $3,000 I had to stretch for 6 months. And wow. That's about $250 a month.
Wow.
So it was tough, but it was definitely, it was a worthwhile endeavor because it made me, it made me plan things out a little bit and be frugal and, spend more time in one place exploring and just walking places. And it was just a better experience, I think, than if I had tons of cash to burn and I was just, wanting to go and visit one place, one place to the next, because that would be more like a tourist than a nomad. I mean, as a nomad, I was literally living like a nomad in that I didn't have a whole lot of money to burn.
Well, one of the blog posts I remember reading was, you, in order to get the money to go, kind of go on this journey, you actually had to sell your truck on Craigslist, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. I sold my truck literally a few days before my plane left. I had a pickup truck and I needed to get rid of it, and I listed it on Craigslist for $1,200. And within 25 minutes or so, I had about 20 responses for people saying they want it right now. So I immediately realized, okay, well, maybe I can get a little more than $1,200. So I responded to a bunch of them saying, if you'll give me $1,400, I'll give it to you right now. And a couple people responded, and within a few hours, I was basically handing over the title and getting my $1,400 cash.
Wow. So you
and,
I was pretty quickly.
Yeah. I did. And I mean, I didn't have much of a choice because it was either that or leave it with my parents to sell. And I didn't really want to leave them with that burden of having to sell my stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it was quite, it all happened really quick because I bought my ticket and I knew, okay, I'm leaving on March 13th, and March 13th came really, really quick. And I can remember, on the day that I left, the day before I left, I can remember just taking all the stuff that I was bringing, and again, it's just one backpack, and I just had all the stuff laid out on the floor, and I realized I'm going to be in India in a few days, and I'm on the other side of the planet in a few days, and it took me about a month actually before I realized that I was actually on the other side of the planet.
Okay, let's talk about going into India. One of the posts that you write about is basically finding a place to stay, and you actually did find a cheap hotel. How much did it cost?
It was $4 a night for the hotel.
Wow.
And it was probably the cheapest hotel. It was the cheapest hotel in that small town.
Yeah.
And I had some interesting visitors that night. Yeah, I will. This was my first hotel in India, even though it was probably a month and a half into my stay there, because I had been staying, with people that I knew in their houses or at places that they let me stay. So this was my first hotel, and $4 a night, laid down in bed, was just starting to fall asleep, and started to feel something biting my hand. At least that's what it felt like. And I had all the lights off, so I had no idea what it was. The light switch was right near the bed. Turned on the light switch, and it was a 2.5-inch cockroach that was literally inches from my face on my hand. I'm not at all scared of bugs or afraid of bugs. I actually like insects. I grew up studying insects and being really fascinated by them. But a giant cockroach a few inches from my face is not something I expected. As I was falling asleep. So I ended up catching the cockroach, throwing it in the toilet and flushing it down the toilet. And when I went to look for the second one that I saw, I discovered about a dozen more underneath the bed that were just living there. And yeah, it was an interesting night, and I ended up sleeping with the light on, the fan on high to hopefully scare them away from crawling on me, and a shirt wrapped around my head to prevent any chance of them going in my ears, and that's pretty much how I fell asleep that night.
Yeah, so that's admirable that you just were able to go through that night and sleep through it, because you know, I'm terrified of cockroaches, and I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this interview are also terrified of cockroaches as well.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience, and I contemplated for a few minutes not going to sleep that night, because you know, it was such a surprise to me. But now when I think back about that, to me it seems so I don't know what the word is. It seems so amateur that I would even consider that unusual. And I think the next morning I was considering telling the hotel owner, like, hey, you've got cockroaches in your room. Then I realized that he's probably going to be like, what do you expect? Of course there's cockroaches in the room. Because, you know, this is India. And after staying in several other hotels, you know, over the following few months, there's cockroaches, there's bugs, mosquitoes, there's lizards. You just get used to it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm interested in like what you saw visiting, you know, countries like India and Vietnam and Nepal. What were the biggest differences between the United States and these countries that you went to?
I would say that while it was something that I somewhat expected, it was something totally different to experience firsthand, and that was the poverty and the living conditions that a lot of people live in. You know, I had seen plenty of videos and heard plenty of stories and pictures and seen plenty of pictures of poverty, of people, you know, living in tough conditions. But when you actually, you know, when you're sitting on a train that stopped at a train stop, at a train station, and a little kid that's, you know, got only a shirt on and no pants on comes over and just taps on your shoulder repeatedly for 5 minutes, you know, putting their hand to their mouth asking for food. And you know, you can see there's a dozen other kids doing the exact same thing in every single train car on that train. That's a totally different experience. I mean, when I was in Gokarna, in the beach town of Gokarna, there was mothers that, you know, we're walking up and down the streets basically with their undernourished child in their arms, and they had their, you know, the mothers were reaching out asking for money or food or whatever to feed their children. I mean, that has a, you know, a totally different effect on you. And it really changed my perception of reality, really. I mean, I went into this journey, you know, wanting to rediscover who I was and looking, you know, wanting to fulfill my childhood dream of world travel, which I did. But, you know, as time went on and the more that I saw this poverty, when I was in Delhi, I saw an entire family of four, two children and a husband and a wife, basically living on the sidewalk, and the kids, you know, slept on a piece of cloth on the concrete sidewalk, and the parents ran a laundry folding business or something like that from a little wooden table that was propped up against a brick wall. And for their roof, which the only thing they had was a roof, was a piece of plastic. And I mean, that was their whole family. That was their whole home.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. It definitely had a huge effect on me. It changed my my feeling of purpose. I suddenly feel a lot more interested in figuring out what I can do to help such people. And I witnessed so much imbalance of abundance, so much wealth that was distributed in the wrong places. People that needed it didn't have it. People that had it didn't really need it. And that really bugged me, and it really, you know, stirred something inside me. And that's what, when I mentioned that my blogging has changed in the past 3 months, that's partially what's changed about it, is that now I'm more focused on figuring out how I can, you know, make people aware, or bring, you know, this bring these things that I've seen to everybody else so they can feel a little bit of what I'm feeling and hopefully do something about it. I mean, that's mainly my focus right now is trying to figure out what I can do or how I can best use my time, my focus to do something that will have a benefit, that will benefit those people that actually need help.
Yeah, you know, and I just thank you for sharing that. I think you are doing a great job of your blog, just providing awareness. One of the problems I feel is that sometimes, you know, especially because I live in the United States, and it's just sometimes we don't appreciate the things that we have and the things that we own already compared to like the rest of the world. And you do see, you know, crisis on television and newspapers,
right.
But you don't see just what you explain there. You don't see like the kid coming up to, you know, a person next to the train or people who are getting off the train for food, or you don't see like the kind of a family living on the street. You see crisis, but you don't actually see those things firsthand. And I think it's a lot more meaningful, powerful, fulfilling when you actually
I think you don't feel it. I think that's what it is. When it comes through in a video, when it comes through in an audio, when it comes through in a picture, or even when it comes through writing,
yeah.
You don't feel the same thing that you feel when you're standing in front of the person, you know, a few feet away from them, and you know that, you know, your life is magnitudes better and magnitudes, you know, more magnitudes safer and more and better off than theirs is. And there's a certain, you know, feeling of hopelessness that you know that you can't solve everybody's problem. I mean, yeah, you could probably take that one person and change their life and, you know, give them enough money to live what they would consider a rich and happy life. But what do you do about the next person and the person after that?
Yeah.
So it's definitely a very frustrating feeling, but it also makes you think. It makes you brainstorm. Okay, well, if I can't help this one person, then what can I do that will benefit everybody? And that's the change that I feel that's come about in me is the desire and the motivation to brainstorm. And it's a matter of, you know, being selfless and not thinking so much about yourself. And what if I don't discover my purpose or discover who I am or whatever? If I can help other people, then that should be enough. And it feels like if I did that, that would be enough for me in my life. So
It's definitely a big thing
to see it firsthand. And I encourage anybody who's thinking of going on vacation somewhere, if you can go on vacation to a third world country, you know, just do it. Go for a few weeks and see firsthand those things. I mean, it's not unsafe as some people would make you believe, and it will really it'll really leave a huge impact on you.
Yeah, and I do, you know, I think when you visit a place outside of what you're comfortable with and what you're familiar with, your mind starts to transform and you start to just see things in a different perspective. And I know that has happened to you, Ram.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So thanks for sharing that. The next transition I want to get into is basically, I mean, I know you've seen people with struggles. And one of the things I write about in my blog are the challenges and struggles that people go through in their life. So I was wondering if you could share maybe one or some of the greatest challenges that you have faced in your life.
It's definitely a bit difficult to share anything after, you know, or it's difficult to see any of the challenges I had in my life as challenges after seeing the challenges, you know, of the past three months of other people's lives that are less fortunate. But two things that I would mention are when I was in my teens, I got out of shape and put on a whole lot of weight and basically spent 2 years teaching myself about fitness and dedicating between 2 and 4 hours every single day working out. And I transformed my body and lost 70 pounds of weight. And it was a big challenge, but it also taught me that anything I put my mind to, I can, you know, make happen. And the other big challenge was my dealing with the stress of owning the 3 rental properties and then losing them and just, you know, handling things like that that I knew were not the end of the world, but it was, you know, something I had to face, and just facing it, facing it and accepting and realizing that tomorrow will come and everything will be okay and everything's going to turn out fine. That got me through those tough situations.
And you talk about, you know, your real estate properties and losing them to the economic downfall during that year.
Yeah.
And I just think that sometimes the greatest challenges or greatest problems that we encounter in life can turn out to be the greatest gifts. I mean, if you had been, you know, I'm not saying I don't know what would have happened, but if you would have been successful with that business, you probably wouldn't be able to go out and see the world like you are doing today.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't have, you know, seen the poverty that I've seen and the chances of my making a difference in the world now just by my motivation to do so means that I most likely will make some kind of change in the world. Whereas had I kept the properties, I would be still into real estate. I would be worrying about how I can afford the properties and pay the bills and probably more interested in building up my own wealth and so on. So, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, anytime a big change comes about in your life, no matter what it is, always try to see the positive in it. Try to see the good that can come of it and see the possibility in things instead of looking at things, you know, through a negative perspective. I believe that positivity, you know, leads to positive events and negativity leads to negative events. So if you're always making positivity your default response to any situation, then you're more than likely going to have a positive end result.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, great advice there. You know, for people who are encountering struggles and problems and challenges right now, what is your main advice for these people who are going through tough times?
I would say, first and foremost, realize that the problems are not nearly as big as you think they are. You know, try to remember that there are other people out there facing much more difficult issues, generally, you know, issues related to life and death, and that when you see things through that lens, your problems seem a lot more manageable. And if you're going through trouble with not knowing direction in life, I'd say follow your heart, accept that not everything is in your control and you know, have faith and trust that you'll come out the other side better off than you went in, regardless of what situation you make.
I remember you talking about following your inner compass in one of your posts. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I was realizing that that all the events that led up to my life at that point were a result of my seeing some or feeling something inside me that was driving me in a specific direction, and I followed that, and even though some of the things at the moment may have seemed like mistakes or may have seemed like failures, like the bankruptcy I had to go through, in the end, they all turned out to be beneficial.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that if we remember that, you know, that sometimes we have to go down what looks like the wrong path in order to find the right path, then we won't be so worried about making the wrong decisions.
Yeah, so expecting it, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Expecting that you will make mistakes, because if you don't make mistakes, then something's wrong. I mean, you're either playing it way too safe or you're not going anywhere. I mean, mistakes are part of living, part of life.
Well, you know, I really got a lot of just value from what you said here, especially the part where, I mean, you've basically traveled third world countries, and I think that just puts people's problems in perspective. So I just really am, you know, next time when I think of going, when I have a problem myself, you know, I'll keep that in mind, and I think it's just very important that we appreciate what we have so far. So thanks, Ram, for what you have said to us in this interview so far.
No problem.
All right, so this is going a little bit over 30 minutes, Ram, and I was wondering if you had any final thoughts or words for the readers or the listeners listening to this podcast right now.
Yes, I would say to remember that you're the author of your own destiny, and don't feel that somebody else has to make all the decisions for you. Whatever you want to get out of life, you can get it. You just have to believe you can get it, and always keep in mind that there are people out there who need your help, and, you know, don't be selfish in your decisions that you make, and always stay positive. Always think of the less fortunate people when you're, you know, about to splurge on a big screen TV or buy a $5 latte. Reconsider it if you don't really need it, if that money or that value could go somewhere that it's more beneficial, then maybe it should go that way. We definitely need more people in this world that are thinking long term and making choices that benefit the world as a whole. And that change in this world, that switch to a world of sustainable abundance, definitely starts with all the little small decisions that we each make every day. So.
All right, Ram. I really appreciated what you had to share with us today, and thanks again for everything.
No problem. Thank you for having me, Hilbert.
That was Ram Dev from Ram Dev. Thanks for listening.